Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Volt here, and joining me today is Todd Satterston. Todd is the publisher and owner of Bard Press. Bard Press specializes in business and personal development titles. I got introduced to Todd through Jay Papasan, co-author of The One Thing. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, it's over Todd's left shoulder, or maybe it's not his left shoulder, maybe it's the other one, maybe it's flipped, I don't know. But that's one of the authors that obviously Todd helped publish. They've got a unique author-driven model where their focus is only on publishing one book a year. Okay. He's also the co-author of a couple books. One is called The 100 Best Business Books of All Time. The other one is called Every Book is a Startup. Really just fun. We were talking about this beforehand, methodology that I wholeheartedly believe in. So just so much to unpack here. I mean, we've got a lot of different publishing experiences. Obviously, he's published some massively successful books. We'll unpack some of that. We'll talk airport bookstores. How do you get into airport bookstores? I know we got into that on the Jay Papasan episode. And if I'm remembering correctly, he said, hey, talk to Todd. He knows a lot more about that than I do. So we're long on questions and short on time. So we'll dive straight into it. Todd, welcome.
Chandler, thanks for having me. Yeah.
So, I mean, first off, why books? Like, why are books such a big part of your life, your career? I mean, you were at 1-800 CEO Read back in the day, so it's not like this is a new thing. You've been in the industry for a long time. Why books?
Yeah. So 20 years officially in books, and around book publishing. I think people who stay in book publishing as long as I have, there's just such affinity for it. Like books, there's something more magical about books than just, they're magical devices that transport us to different places. The fact that we can read a book and find out what someone was thinking 50, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 years ago, I just think that's magical. And I think, I believe in that effort, and I believe in continuing to publish into that scene.
Mm, yeah, I agree with that. So you've got a background as an engineer, and I want to maybe start there, and maybe this will be relevant for five people that listen to this, but maybe there's some things that, so shout out all our engineers. I think there's probably also going to be some other kind of just crossover for people who aren't engineers, but I want to double click on what did you learn as an engineer that you felt like carried over into book publishing and it's made you really good at publishing and promoting great books?
Yeah. Process. The number one thing that you learn as an engineer is you learn about process, whether it's you're in school and you're learning how to solve really complicated thermodynamic equations that take 12 steps to manipulate the variables. Or, you know, I spent a decade in manufacturing before I moved into book publishing. So that's all about process. It's all about repeatability. It's all about step A, step B, step C. What's the next thing? How do you get repeatable, reproducible quality outputs? How do I build good systems that do what we want them to do? So that's got to be the biggest thing I bring when I think about publishing. Yeah.
Mm, so process. And I was telling you right before this, I texted Jay Papasan earlier today. I was like, hey, I'm interviewing Todd today. Like, what do I got to ask him? And he said, you know, that guy knows how to make what makes a bestseller. Yeah. He's done it so many times. He knows it. And so I guess maybe let's overlay that these two questions, your process engineer brain with the process of becoming a bestseller. What is it as you see it?
Yeah. So I think that I would start by saying, in all honesty, that it's very difficult to say that we ever start with a bestseller that we think, man, we know this thing's going to. I think if you asked Jay or if you asked Ray, who founded Bard Press, was the one thing going to sell 3 million copies, which is what, you know, it was the threshold that just passed this year. They would have said, yeah, we thought it was going to do good, but, you know, you could never predict that. So what's really interesting for me is I want to build a book that I call it a deep well book. We use bodies of water to kind of describe different kinds of books when we talk about books at Bard Press. So I want to build a well book. And what I mean by a well book is I want a book that has a substantial enough audience that I know we can both sell enough copies to make it work both for Bard and for the author, but also that there's an emotional felt need that people can connect to, a logical and emotional need that people can connect to. I want people to feel like they've got to cross the street, literally still go into a Barnes & Noble or their local indie and go find and ask about the books that we publish. If we can create that kind of book and that kind of buzz, that's the kind of thing that creates success in the long run.
So in your mind, that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. If we, like, I love the line, I think it's like Mark McCormick has this line that says, the person who defines the problem the best is the one who wins the sale. So we spend an enormous amount of time in our books thinking about the problem that book is trying to solve. What's the felt need? What's the thing where someone says, oh, right, yes, that is exactly the problem I have. The better I can describe it in the words that the end customer identifies with, the more successful I'm going to be. I'll give you one other example of this. We think a lot about symptoms and then the problem. So the symptom is what someone's going to say. They're going to say, oh, gosh, my knee hurts. Mm-hmm. Well, as we know, there's 3 dozen, 4,000, there's 100 things that could be wrong with somebody's knee as to why it's complaining. Not enough movement, a blood clot, torn meniscus. So I want to work on, when we're doing books, I want the person to describe me, what are those symptoms? Like, what does this thing feel like to you when you're trying to deal with this? Oh, it's like this and it's like that. And oh, okay, great, great, great. The turn, the thing that I think makes books, really good books, magical is when you could say, okay, I understand those symptoms, but guess what? Here's actually the problem. Let me diagnose for you the thing that you're really trying to work on. And here's the problem you need to focus on. And a lot of times that's the only surprise that a good, you know, how-to business book, self-help book needs is the, oh my gosh, I see this problem completely differently than I've ever have before. And then from there you can give solutions, but it's that problem, that symptom to problem piece that we just spend an enormous amount of time on.
And so when you're working with an author, do they usually have that defined on the way in, or you work with them to more clearly define it?
Yeah, they have a sense for it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of working with people who have been working on a problem for a while. So somebody who's just started a coaching practice or consultancy, usually they're just getting into that piece of really understanding what the symptoms and the problems are. I love working with people who have been working on that problem for 10, 15, 20 years, because when you get into that, you can really clarify that conversation very quickly. And they can very quickly go, oh yeah, the first thing people say are X. But then when I work with them, oh, it's Y that really, really works for them. So when we can make that arc, a lot of times people don't make that connection, that the importance of defining the problem the right way. But I think it's one of the things that we do really well when we work with authors.
That's cool. All right. So I want to do a deep dive into kind of your process at Bard Press and the why behind that process. And so I want to start with the why, like, why a book a year? I mean, I think a lot of people I talk about this in my book and publish, right? Like, kind of this model of, like, most book publishers, they're just venture capitalists. But instead of businesses, they're funding books, right? And so, gosh, I'm trying to find the exact page. Yeah, page 28, right? Where you've got kind of like, you've got this you know, there's going to be the one unicorn that's going to pay the bills for everything. You've got a bunch of them that are going to have mediocre success, and then most will flop, right? And so if you've got 10 books, one's going to be a unicorn that's an outsized return, 10 to 100x return on the advance. You've got a bunch that'll, you know, maybe 2x, or not a bunch. You've got one or two, maybe three out of 10 that are going to kind of 2 to 3x their return. And then you've got most of them that will, you know, fail to earn back their advance. And so it's, you know, just placing bets, and then let's hope that that one out of 10 does really well. Right. Maybe even less than that. So I think that's like the traditional venture capital model and the traditional, maybe, you know, book publishing model. You guys have taken a totally different approach, as I, you know, as I can see it from where I sit, not knowing under the hood, is, hey, we're going to pick winners because we can only publish one a year. So what's the why behind that?
Yeah. So I'm going to offer another metaphor. I think the metaphor that you offered, which venture capital is a good one, I would think that most publishers, I'm just going to change the financial instrument. I think most publishers are mutual funds, and that their job is to invest across a variety of titles and properties like you described. Some are going to do well, some aren't. At Bard, we're a stock picker. And so our bet is that we're going to find the one stock that we think can outperform and do better than the combined effect of, because what are you doing when you're doing that mutual fund piece? What you're doing is you are balancing out
spreading it,
all of those returns, right? So yes, you've got the unicorn, but I'm balancing out against all the other pieces. So, go ahead.
No, keep going.
Okay. So the piece that, I think there's two pieces that fit next to this that are really important. One is that the minute that you say you're only going to do one book a year, a couple different things happen. One, it means that I can spend the whole year working with that author on that book. Whereas in that other model, whether it's the agent or the editor or the publisher, the amount of time that they've got to be able to focus on each one of those books, if it's 10 books or 20 books or 50 books a year, I can spend an enormous amount of time developing that book. And my hypothesis is that actually better developed books sell better, right? If I'm only doing one book a year, I don't have a backlist of 100 titles or 200 titles or 300 titles. I can continue to invest in a book in year two, in year three, in year four, and I can stay with it. So that long-term philosophy to staying with a book over a long period of time also gives me an advantage. The third piece is this. My hypothesis is that I can work with authors and I can make them more successful as people who use books in their business. And by using the books in their business, the publishing venture that we get involved in with them is more successful, but then their businesses are more successful. And by tying those two things together, we end up being more successful as Bard, and they, as you know, whatever their endeavor is, ends up being more successful.
Cool. That's really intriguing. It almost sounds like we're throwing so many financial analogies in here, but it almost seems like you're taking the Warren Buffett approach,
yes,
right? Or maybe even the Andrew Carnegie. I think they had both. So, you know, Warren Buffett, all right, I only want to do one investment, maybe a year, if that. Or, you know, you talked about the kind of the mutual fund or the ETF or whatever approach of just spreading. And, you know, Andrew Carnegie famously says, he's like, diversification is, I forget what the exact quote is, but don't diversify. He says, put all your eggs in one basket and then watch that basket like a hawk. And it seems Absolutely. Like you're taking that approach with the books that you publish. Walk me through maybe, So I guess that's the why. Now the how, like, how do you,
Chandler, Chandler, let me add one more thing to this. So I've been talking about the I feel like there's one more piece as you go into like, well, then what do you do? The minute that I say I only do one book a year, what does that signal to the market?
Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement.
So I can go to my distributor and I can go to retailers and I say, listen, Bard does one book a year. And hey, look at these books that we've done. Gosh, they've done pretty well for you. They've been pretty successful. I just want you to make a bet on me once a year. Bring this book in. Let's see if we can partner together to make that book successful. Mm. And so it signals something to the author in terms of mm-hmm. how much time I'm going to spend with them. It signals something to the market and my distribution partners and my retail partners that, man, this book is going to be an amazing book. And so that's just one other piece that I want to put next to these other things, because then as you start talking about, okay, talk to me about process, well, then it starts to, you know, make a whole bunch of additional sense. Sorry.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess talk to me about process, kind of what you just said, right? Like, how does it work, and how do you guys have such a high hit rate with your authors? You alluded to it a little bit of like, hey, I want to integrate it into their business so that then they continue promoting the book and it also makes their business more successful. But what's the process of working with authors? And I know, Jay, when we were at, I feel like it was breakfast, like a couple months ago or something, He was talking, or maybe it was on the podcast interview, I can't remember, but he's like, just the way that you guys do it makes a lot of sense. And is author friendly, and really helpful. So can you kind of walk me through how it works?
Yeah. So, I hope we don't put too many different metaphors into this podcast, but I think of us up front as like an architect, where there's lots of people, you know, if you go to commercial publishing, it's like buying a spec house. You know how many rooms it's going to have, how many bathrooms, you know how much the book's going to cost, you know how much the house is going to cost. Commercial publishing, very predictable, but you're buying a very particular thing, buying in quotes. Lots of self-publishing is you're hiring a general contractor. Like, you need somebody to like figure out, I need an editor and I need a designer and I need someone to help me figure out what's the best distribution path for me? Great general contractor. Lots of great people out there who do that. I think of Bard as a design build company. So we're architects and we also build the book with you and we build a launch strategy for you. So the first part of the process is very architectural. Like, we're trying to figure out, what does this look like? Usually it takes a year, frankly, because here's what I do. When I sign with an author, the first thing I do is I become a client. I go to all their training. I go interview their clients. I try to immerse myself as much as I possibly can so that I can potentially hear things that the author has just gotten to a point after having done it for 10 or 20 years, they're almost like taking for granted. Like, I'm looking all over the place for what's interesting. Like, what's that thing? What's the take that's a little different? So that first process probably takes a year for us. And what we're doing is we're building a through line and we're thinking about title and subtitle. We're thinking about that book description. We're thinking about table of contents. We're thinking about, what is this first chapter or two or three chapters? And we start with the title. Like, I won't let an author start writing a book.
Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement.
Unless we've got the title figured out. Because the title does so much to frame how people think about that book, the title and subtitle, that's the first place we start. Like, I want to know, what is this thing going to be about from the start? Because if we don't know what the what is of the book, how can we're going to be like searching for it as we go through it? So very engineering-like, lots of planning up front. But when we actually go do the work, we do it quickly. Like, most of my authors can actually write their books in 4 to 6 months because we've done so much work up front to be really clear about how to do that. And then there's a point in time where the paths sort of cross. We start thinking about launch, but the launch is usually a year-long process. What are the unique things does that individual author or the organization they're a part of, what do they bring to this? And how can I extend that through line to not just the book, but what in that through line can be extended into marketing so that as we market the book and we're sharing the message of the book, that we use that in the marketing itself. So if I'm teaching something in the book, can I use that to be something that I'm using to teach in the marketing?
That's really interesting, huh? And the piece of the, I'd love to get your feedback on this, because I feel like, you know, one of the things I've always told people is, hey, come up with your book title last. Because I'm like, you know, sometimes your title can be very limiting and you don't write the book that needs to be written. You write your way to the title. Or what we see with a lot of authors is just like, they'll spend so much time trying to figure out their title. And what they really should be doing is working on the book and getting their draft done. So I guess what is your thought process? Like, why do it first? And just what's your take on kind of the different ways that we teach that?
Yeah. So title and subtitle for me are super straightforward. The title, the job of the title is to describe the book to me, but in a very particular way. It needs to be positive and it needs to be, it needs to have a change function in it. So like Good to Great is the best business book title of all time, because who doesn't think they're the B+ student that wants to be the A- student? Like Jim Collins was brilliant in creating that book called Good to Great. We buy books because we want to solve a problem. We want to change something in our lives. So broadcast that from the title. Be very clear. This is, so like, think about your book Published. It is actually a change function. It's subtle about it, but like, I wasn't, but now if I read this book, I will figure out how I will be.
Our
2023 book that just came out, that's also over my shoulder here, When Everyone Leads. That's not how people actually think about leadership. We think about leadership as authority, as there's only a few individuals who could be leaders. We're trying to change our view on what that is. And God, what happens if when everyone leads? What does that look like? What happens?
Mm-hmm.
So title, subtitle. Subtitle is the promise. What am I going to get out of reading this book? Smarter, faster, richer, sexier, like whatever the thing is, there's some gets, right? Right. And so being super clear about the step-by-step guide to blah, blah, blah. You know, Jay's book, you know, it's The Surprising Truth About Success. Whatever that thing is, we want to make a promise, a really clear promise. So here would be my argument of why I want to do those first. If I don't know what the promise is and I can't describe what the change function is,
makes sense.
How can I be clear about what the book is? Now, here's what happens. And we're working on the 2024 book right now, and we've gotten through the through line. The author's about five chapters in, and I'm like, okay, let's pause. Is everything still true? Is our title still good? Is our subtitle still good? Is the table of contents, how are we labeling things right? And we came up with a big aha this week of like, oh, you know what? We need to come up with a different term for our audience, and we need to broadcast that from the title. And so it's going to influence the subtitle. It's going to influence a little bit of the manuscript, not a ton, but there'll be enough sprinkling of that new idea in there that it's going to be able to be even clearer as we go further.
Yeah, that's so great, man. Really is an engineer's approach. The engineer's approach. And I like that a lot. We're very aligned on, I feel like, a lot of those methodologies, because we always talk about the four P's of a best-selling book, right? Person, pain, promise, price.
Yes.
Same thing you're talking about. Who's the person that you're writing it to? Someone that you actually know in your real life. What's the pain that they have that they know that they have?
Yes.
What's the promise that you're making with this book? And then what's the price, which is pretty straightforward, depending on the type of book and format and all that stuff. So I think I love the alignment there of getting super clear on that. And then it's the hard part, which is crystallizing it into your title. And so I think that's probably the common ground is whether you do that at the beginning or whether you do it at the end, you need to be clear on those four things, or at least Yeah.
Well, I think when you say those four things, I would argue, I don't think you may gain clarity. Like you might go from 85 to 95%, right? But I think you want to be clear at, you want to be at the 85% level on the front side. Like table mm-hmm. of contents,
yep, yep,
right?
Yep.
Table mm-hmm. of contents. That's the, frankly, it's the most important thing before you start a book. We spend enormous amounts of time on our table of contents for two reasons. One, and it's not just chapters, it's subheaders in the chapter. So I want the writer, when they start writing, that author to know, okay, this mm-hmm. is going to be about this, and then I'm going to talk about these next three things. Mm-hmm. It's also important because I think the table of contents can be another piece of marketing for your book.
Right.
You open up those table of contents and it's like, all those clever chapter titles where they want to be very pithy, but you have no idea what the chapter's about. Very clear. Tell me what's in it.
You're not clever. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So I just think all those pieces fit together, and it's like, I want to have the plan for the book. Again, maybe it's that engineering piece. Maybe you're bringing that piece out in our conversation today more than others have, that I want to do as much of that work up front, because I think it makes the work of the building actually easier, the writing.
Yeah. And the better the table of contents, the better the book and the faster it's written. And so I think that's probably the secret weapon behind what you alluded to earlier, which is, hey, once my authors start writing, they get it done in 4 to 6 months, maybe less than that, because you've got a really clear table of contents, which serves as the outline that they can work from. So, man, I could keep talking about a lot of this stuff for a long time. I want to go down the airport bookstores route, though, because that's something I really have got some questions on for you and would love to get your take. So I guess, and Jay spoke to this some from his experience, but I would love to hear your experience. Like, I guess, first off, are they worth it for authors to get into airport bookstores? It's just something that we have people ask about often with our business authors. So are they worth it? And is this something that's only available to traditionally published authors? Is it also available to self-published authors? Let's start there.
Yeah. So I think there's a, I would say, is it worth it to business authors? I would say for the most part, the answer is yes, it is. Now, the way that you get to it, though, is a little bit unconventional. And what I mean by that is you will never sell enough books through airport and never make up the margin through book sales for what it costs for you to be there. But if you have a robust, if you've written the right book that works in the airport space, and literally, here's the thing, it's got to work on the shelf. Like that book has got to be a magnet that wants to pull, that pulls people over to it, makes them pick it up and start reading it. So great retail presence still matters on books, even in the online space. So I say all that because it costs an enormous amount of money to be in airports. Like we're talking $10,000 to $20,000 a month. A month, right? Think about how many books you have to sell to make up, to break even on that. You will not get anywhere near it unless you are Malcolm Gladwell or Michael Lewis, right? It's that kind of level of success of what you need to move through there. But here's the thing. If you are a business book author that is selling anything in the realm of coaching, consulting, training, and one person picks up that book and that engagement turns into a paid speaking event, a six-figure, like if you're doing this right, it should turn into a six-figure consulting event. That alone, and then the lifetime value of that relationship. Now, you've got to have a lot of that money. Like you've got to have a pretty big marketing budget for you to be in that spot. So it's not going to be through selling books that it's going to happen as a direct ROI. It's going to be, you're making a much bigger bet in relationship to your business.
That makes sense. And is this something that's only available for traditionally published authors, or is it possible to even do this as a self-published author?
You know, as far as I know, you probably have to at least have some kind of distribution relationship, you know, the main airport folks like Hudson's, which I'm sure you and everybody are familiar with, but there are three or four other chains that manage stores for other people, Stellar and Paradies and Trophy, Marshall Retail Group. There's about five of them out there. And it's my experience, I can't speak to too much to the self-publishing side. My experience is that it's because we have a good relationship through our distributor with those folks that we're able to be in those spots when it makes sense for us.
I see. So there's essentially direct distributor relationships with a person who's the buyer at Hudson's or at one of these places. And you're saying, hey, we've got this book coming out. We want to do a 2-month buy for X position. And so can you give us some good rates on that? Like that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. And it's either, hey, I'm launching a book. What can you do? Okay. On table for 2 months, spine out for the third month. Or it could be, hey, I'm going to be doing a business book promotion. Yes, we'd love to be there. We'd love to be featured in it. Let's figure out how to work with that.
Got it. And so I guess if someone who is self-publishing and they want to see how it goes, they would essentially have to figure out how to get in touch with those distributors.
Yeah. They got to be distributed, or you've got to figure out your route to those buyers who are looking for those pieces. And I think you're going to have a much, much better chance of success through distribution or through someone who has, it could be other people who have that relationship with them. But my guess is going to be, I'm speaking from a little bit of experience, not a huge amount of when I walk into an airport bookstore, most of the time I'm going to see commercially published books with traditional publishers on the spine.
Right. It makes sense. And now, so let's say somehow we were able to, you know, go to this distributor, or maybe we're just cold calling Hudson buyers and we get a price sheet and we say, all right, let's, you know, kind of go from there and figuring out terms. We're going to have, as you mentioned, I mean, 10 to 30, I think you said $10,000 to $30,000 a month. So even if we just did it for a month, then they're probably going to want a longer commitment than a month. So go through that. All right. We want to negotiate. What are the best terms in that? Like you mentioned, like face out on the table, spine out, like, are there any things that, I mean, obviously I'm assuming the better the placement, the more expensive it is, but like, how does that work? And what are the best placements or setups?
Yeah. So, we've tried all of them over time. We've been doing this for about 20 years, and I don't think what I'm going to tell you is going to be surprising. A shelf at the entrance to the store face out is going to perform 10 times better than literally a book on a table. Like even though there's a stack of books there. So let's say that for a book like ours, we would be happy if in a given week, we were selling 100 to 200 copies. If it was front of store face out, that'd be awesome. Right. When I'm on table, right. So, and you see it all the time. You see those tables and there's a stack of 5 or 6 books and what are there, maybe 20 books on the table. And you're kind of going, oh, let me look here. Let me check all those out. It turns out we end up selling about half as many in that space. So it's 25 to 50 books a week. The minute that I go into a situation where I'm either face out somewhere, maybe in the back of the store, or I go to spine, my performance drops again. So, you know, retail placement, like when you talk to folks who do retail placement for a living, like I'm just living out all the experience they always tell you, man, front of store is best, you know, face out, like being able to be seen next best, like a spine, I'm going to sell 5 copies a week or 2 copies a week.
Oh, so, interesting.
So, and like you said, so it's to me, it's like the only way in. And this is what I advise my authors is only buy the best space, spend the money and buy the best space, because the spine out location, you're not going to get the sales movement, which means you're not going to create enough opportunities for that other stuff that we want to have happen.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to donate books? Like, is that something that airports would ever entertain? Is like, hey, I'll give you 1,000 copies. I'm not going to pay for placement, but I'll give you 1,000 copies. You sell them, you keep, like, do they do that?
The value of the space is even higher than that.
Ah, I see. So their take is, hey, I'm either going to sell this space to you or I'm going to sell it to someone else. That's so correct. the delta is not worth it for them of if they would buy them. Because, well, actually, I'll ask a follow-up. If you're paying $10,000. Yeah, yep. 10 grand. So if you're paying 10 grand, are you also giving them the books or they're buying those books at wholesale?
They're buying those books at wholesale. And you are getting, you know, there's revenue coming back through it. Like, it's going to be just like a sale, like mm-hmm. you did through Barnes and Noble or an Indie or Amazon. So same terms. So there is some revenue coming back from that.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. But let's do that math, right? When it's all said and done, after you have to pay everybody, how much is left? $5, $3, like somewhere in that range. Now go do the math back against that $10,000 placement. I've got to sell 2,000 copies a month just to break even. So mm-hmm. love the fact that yes, there's revenue coming back through that, but
through the wholesale.
Not enough through the wholesale piece,
yeah.
but not enough to, you know, cover the high end, to cover the best kind of placement that you can get.
That makes sense. Spaces. I mean, because let's say you're selling at wholesale. I mean, what's common at selling for wholesale? Half?
Yeah.
So I guess if you're doing a $10,000 paid placement, it's really about $5,000. Is that how the math works out?
No. So think about it like this. Let's say I paid $10,000 to be front of store at Hudson's for a month. Yep. So $10,000, I'm literally going to write them a check for $10,000. They're going to send me a bill. They're going to say, you owe me $10,000.
Right? Yep.
What's going to happen on the book publishing side is that they're going to sell books. So let's say that my math was good. Let's say I was doing really, really well, and I was selling 250 copies a week. So I might sell 1,000 copies over that month. I might make $5,000 that trickles back through the distribution chain.
Right. Yeah.
But I still didn't make back the 10 that I paid. There was a net loss. $5,000. Okay.
I don't know why I was thinking like apples.
No. It's all good.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Because I guess I was thinking in the form of they're buying $10,000 worth of books, but that makes a lot. They're only, so you're getting there. Hey, here's $10,000. And they're only buying, all right, you know, 10 books a store, 50 books a store, or right. whatever the thing they're probably, is.
And this is the tricky part about it. This is one other piece that as people are thinking about it, whether it's self-published or commercial authors are thinking about it, is that, you know, they might buy 1,000 books, like you just said, stack on each one of these tables. They're going to put them in, you know, 100 stores, 150 stores. Anything that's not, what they do is they keep reordering to make sure that stack is always 5 or 6 high. When the promotion's over, all those books get returned back to you. So you might have had the sales out the door. You certainly had some retail sales as the result being there, but they're also not, you know, that 1,000 copies essentially also comes back to you in a return, which, you know, sometimes, you know, can hurt a little bit.
For sure. Yeah. Man, this is so great, Todd. I love just nerding out on all this stuff with you. A couple final questions.
Yep.
First one would be knowing what you know now, you know, from lots of book experience on the publishing side of things, and then obviously as on an author side of things, publishing 2 books yourself. What advice would you give to the Todd from 2 books ago and many moons ago before you even got into this world and the other Todds that might be listening and thinking about writing and publishing their first book?
I would say start today in building your own distribution for your ideas. Start today. Like, do not wait one more day. And what I mean by that is, like, figure out whatever works for you. If it's an email list, if it's TikTok, if it's YouTube, like, figure out whatever that mechanism is. Of course, you're going to have a website that's going to be a landing site for them, but you have to start building an audience for your ideas, because that's, frankly, that's the only way that you know whether or not you're writing into the right thing. Are you writing something that people care about? Are people saying, oh my gosh, please write more? If we go back to the whole startup metaphor, like, you know, that customers can mean a lot of different things. It could be people's attention. It could also be people's money. So I think the most important thing is start finding an audience for the work that you do today. And it's going to take a long time. It's going to take 3 years. It's going to take 5 years. It's going to take way longer than you expect. And then what I would do is I would, as a part of that arc of time, I would expose these ideas as early as and often as I can. Frankly, like, I think if you look at a book like Atomic Habits from James Clear, love the book. The book is selling at rates that have never been reached in business books in the 20 years that I've been worked in it. But if you've been following James for a long time, a lot of that material was vetted in a really, really good way on his blog in the years before that book came into the market. So do the thing that you can to both build the audience. Because what do? He built the audience, then he built the book, and he built his audience way bigger than you'd expect. So that's probably, if it was one thing I was going to say, I would say do that.
That's great. I like that a lot. We just did that. It's funny. It's right here on the shelf. We just did that one for our company book club. And a great book. And James was on the podcast. So if anyone wants to hear the behind the scenes of, I think maybe when he came on, he was at 3 million copies or 2 or 3 million. So if you want to see the behind the scenes of that, hear the behind the scenes of that, check out that episode. Todd, this is awesome, man. This has been a lot of fun. Where can people go to find out more about you, your books, to find out more about Bard Press? Where's the best place for people to go?
The absolute best place is bardpress.com. We've got a website that has all of our books. There's an email newsletter at the bottom of the page you can subscribe to keep up to date with both information and updates. All our books are there. We've got a blog where we're always talking about sort of our view on publishing. Best place to find us.
Awesome. Todd, appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you'd be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode. All right. Number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast, wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right. Reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.